Welcome to Cheaper Than Therapy, a podcast that journeys into conversations with the intention of demystifying, destigmatizing, and desensitizing what really gets talked about behind the closed doors of the therapy room.
I'm Vanessa Bennett.
And I'm Danae Selkin.
And we're seekers, soul sisters, and holders of sacred space. So join us as we dive into the ways that therapy can be connecting not only to yourself, but also to those around you. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cheaper Than Therapy. So today we're talking to Zoe, and Zoe wrote in talking about, you know, just navigating what it looks like to have just gone through a divorce during the pandemic, which like layer on top of layer, I'm sure, of stress, single parenting, you know, now I'm sure even considering the idea of dating. What does that look like? How do we unpack stuff relationally? I'm sure that you've come to realize about that now divorce, right? That relationship. So I'd love for you to take us a little bit deeper.
Yeah. So I got divorced last March, it was. And the divorce was finalized pretty quickly. I had decided in September of 2019 that my marriage was absolutely over. I'd been thinking it for a long time, but I finally, there was a final straw and that was it. I was done. I filed in the beginning of January of 2020, and by March 12th, it was done. I was divorced. So then I found myself having to sell the family home. I couldn't afford to live there by myself, which was really hard for me. That was my one kind of real piece of stability, kind of in the chaos of my marriage and all the kind of emotional ups and downs of that. So that was really a real kind of piece of mourning for me, was having to leave that home, which was a real, that was very emotional for me, as well as having to leave take the children out of what had been their family home and a great neighborhood, that kind of old school neighborhood where all the kids play together, you know, out front all summer long. Yeah. My best friend lived two doors down. So that was really actually the hardest part, was leaving that home. And everything just happened at once. So divorce, COVID, my first grader being out of school, my other kid was in daycare, and then moving from a home into an apartment with my two kids and being isolating, you know, because it was right when COVID hit. So everything just came crashing down at once. And I just found myself, you know, in an apartment with my kids, kind of. And I thought my divorce was going to be like, hey, this is freedom, start of your new life. Like, what's that going to look like? What are you going to do? And I'm like, okay, I'm going nowhere. I'm meeting no one. And my kids are really struggling. And it was just a really overwhelming time.
Yeah.
So my kids went back to school finally last week.
I want to clap.
Life has changed again. So it's been 10 months of just, you know, I finally kind of adjusted to that. And now I have a lot more time. I was also laid off not long after I got divorced due to COVID. So I've really been home with my kids pretty much the whole time. And now it's like, okay, what does life look like now? And like you said, possibly thinking about dating and working on myself and kind of that kind of trauma and loss from everything that has happened. So
do you feel like now that the dust has somewhat settled, has there been any kind of like aha moments or, you know, during this time of reflection and kind of almost cocooning, because I feel like that's what it's been a force for most of us, right? Has there been anything that you've taken away from this time where you've said, you know what, I realize this now, you know, about the relationship, about kind of that chapter in your life?
Yeah, I think I've learned a lot about resiliency this year, for sure. I mean, there's definitely been times where I broke down, you know, on multiple occasions. Right near the start, I'm calling my mom like, I can't do this. These kids are being awful. How am I going to, if I had looked back in March, April, May, and thought that my kids were going to be home for 10 months, I don't know how I would have done it. Like if I hadn't just been able to just take it, I really had to break life down into not knowing and letting go of that control.
I love that.
Because I think in my marriage had been so chaotic in so many ways. I wanted to have control so badly. Mm. So I've really had to let go of, accepting the not knowing, and a lot of people, you know, saying to me, we're not in control. You know, there's nothing that we can control. And just really taking the time to, just breathe. Mm. I think life has been so kind of up here so much that I'm just trying to learn how to breathe and just enjoying being by myself. Yeah, I don't know if that really answers the question.
No, it does. I mean, resiliency in general, like I think you just basically beautifully talked about what resiliency looks like in the moment, in the flesh.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Zoe, first and foremost, I've got to say it because I know it's the fact that's here in the room. You are a friggin' warrior, girl. And that is like the baseline from which we are starting this conversation. And I do think that that is the gift of going through these really, really difficult moments, that if we were to, outside of the moment, you know, think about all of the things that you just described happening to us, we would not believe that we would possibly survive them. And here you are, having survived all of what last year was for all of us collectively, but certainly as parents. It's the fact that we as parents are like keeping our heads above water is just miraculous. And in addition to all of the other things, just whoa. But it does really bring home on a visceral level what I am capable of. You know, I have gotten through this last year, and now I know, you know, I know myself on a different level. I know what I'm capable of doing on a different level. And I guess what's really coming up for me is being curious about what you want after this last year, like what you're feeling like you want for yourself.
Yeah, I am. In terms of relationships, it really kind of opened my eyes to just how much I kind of, I guess, shrank myself in the past. My marriage was someone who has a lot of untreated mental health problems. And it was years of just, you know, walking on eggshells and waking up not knowing what mood the other person was going to be in, and just kind of living life in survival mode. You know, when you get to the point where you just become really hopeless and realize that things aren't going to change, so you just kind of go inside of yourself and just kind of basically stop trying and just kind of live life day to day in survival mode. That's what life became like for a really long time, until I got to a real rock bottom and I thought, I was looking forward to the future and I thought, this can't be what my life is going to be like. I was so hopeless. And I was like, am I ever going to have anything to look forward to? Like, I'm so miserably unhappy. And I just was like, this isn't going to be my life. And I didn't want that to be the relationship that my children were seeing modeled. So I finally was like, no, this isn't going to be my life. You know, I deserve happiness, and my children deserve, you know, they love their dad loves them, but it was not, it was a toxic, very toxic environment. It forced me to look at my own patterns of behavior. I kind of realized, I'm like, you know, like you say, is this being different relations, same pattern, different faces, you know, this kind of like looking back at previous people and, it just being a real pattern of behavior. So,
but you broke that pattern. It sounds like you're deciding to choose you, to choose your kids, to choose yourself. When you're saying it, that feels like a break in pattern.
Yeah. And I decided, you know, when I first got divorced, I was kind of like, oh, I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be doing that. And now I'm really taking the time, and I'm okay with the fact that I might be single for a while. I am not in any rush because I've kind of known in my head what I'm looking for, and that's probably going to take a while to find. And I'm okay with that. I've kind of been like, when people talk to me about dating, I'm kind of like,
It'll happen when it happens.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm really grateful you're bringing this conversation to us, Zoe, because I feel like I quite often talk to clients who are in the space that you're describing. And I think it's going to be really helpful for someone else to hear you describing what it felt like to be in that space. And what comes up for me so much of the time is choose your hard, right? It's going to be hard regardless, right? Like being married when it's not authentic and making you miserable and not the truth of what you want for your life is hard. It's going to be hard when you are co-parenting with someone after, right? But choose your hard, right? Like, is the hard that I want, the hard that is sort of me living an authentic life and me teaching my children how to choose themselves. And, you know, we get this one go round, right? So if it's going to be hard either way, which hard do I want to choose, you know?
Sure. I have a boy and a girl. So in one respect, I didn't want my son growing up to think that whether he's with a man or a woman, whatever partner he ends up with, that that was how he spoke to or treated his partner. I didn't want to see his dad the way his dad treated me. That's not the norm. And I also wanted my daughter, who's already a force of nature, I think she'll be fine, but I didn't want her to see that this is what you accept in a relationship. So from both of them, I just felt this responsibility of, yeah, that's to me what kind of parenting was that what relationships they are seeing as they grow up.
You know, I love this because what it feels like for me is so many times when we're talking to somebody, we're actually talking to them or they come to us about five steps back from where you are right now, right? So they're standing on this precipice and they're like, what do I do? What hard, to use Delaney's language, you know, what hard do I want to choose? You're actually now into the threshold. Like, you've kind of crossed one threshold and now you're looking out at the potential for your life. And I mean, look, COVID has thrown all of us for a loop, right? We don't know when it's going to be over. We don't know what normal, quote unquote, is going to look like. But it feels to me like you've done a lot of integrating and a lot of sitting with, like, I know why I made these decisions and I know what my patterns are and I plan on kind of continuing to do the work. If you sat in almost an imaginal space, let's pretend like COVID tomorrow, poof, it's gone. We can actually, I don't know, talk to people, not wear masks, like, you know, the other humans, hug them.
I was about to say, let's be honest, but you're talking about making out with people.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. That might be one component.
Carry on.
But it's like, if we sit there and we say, poof, okay, tomorrow that's gone, what do you see for yourself? Like, go to a place of imagination. Like, if you could wave a wand and your life could kind of lay itself out in the way that you feel it should. I guess I don't love that word, but that's the word that came up. What kind of comes up for you?
That's hard to know apart from kind of what everyone else wants in terms of being able to socialize and just be around people. And
the reason why I want to come back to this is because Danae asked a similar question and you went back to a space of the learnings that you've had so far, which I think is beautiful and amazing. Mm-hmm. And I want to push you again to say, like, now it's time. Like, what do I want? What do I see for myself?
That's the part where I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to name it. God, I relate to that so much. And that is a different type of work and another, like, it's another level of work, right? So this is like your leveling up work. Now that I've sort of like done so much of the work around choosing my family and doing the right thing and like basically like putting the oxygen mask on this situation and getting out, now I get to create.
Yeah.
And that, whoo, is, I mean, it's amazing and scary simultaneously, right? Like, because if my life belongs to me, which let's be honest, this is the realm of my life all of a sudden belongs to me for the first time in a while. What do I want to do with that phenomenal cosmic power?
I feel like I've been in that freeze state for a really long time. And I know that when I'm stressed, I am the world's greatest procrastinator. I sit there and I just have this feeling of just when I get overwhelmed, I just don't do anything. So almost having all of these options all of a sudden and, you know, people saying to me, okay, now your kids are back in school, time to get a job. And what are you going to do? And I'm just kind of like, like, I'm still trying to breathe a little bit. So, yeah.
So it sounds like having all those possibilities is kind of the thing that gets really scary and overwhelming for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so let's breathe into that a little bit together, right? Like, let's actually take a collective breath. And that, you know, this is where, to V's point, like, we do want to invite the shoulds to exit the room a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you get to tap into the realm of who Zoe was before she was conditioned to believe who she had to be, who I would be if there were no sort of, you know, boundaries around like what is going to be the smartest way to make money or what is going to be the most, what's the word that's, the word's
just
not coming.
It's like a logical choice, right? Like, I feel like so many of us, right, especially at the stage that you're in right now, it's like, okay, you know, and you're a mom. So trust me, we get that, but it's like, okay, gotta be logical, gotta do the thing that makes sense. And like, yes. And
what V is talking about in terms of the imaginal space, it's a real shift in gears from that space of the logical, right? Like, we got to get out of like the thing that makes sense and into the, like, what would, to use Joseph Campbell's phrasing, like, following my bliss even look like? Like, how can I start to discover my bliss? What is bliss for me? Like, maybe I don't know. And that's not a like quick fix, like, answer that's going to come. It's really just allowing myself to start to be in the exploration. And a lot of that's going to be trial and error, Zoe. You know, it might be like, maybe I paint. I don't really love painting. You know, maybe I want to go swimming. Not for me. But maybe I start hiking and, oh my gosh, something happens in my soul when I am out in nature hiking. And that is information, right? Like,
oh,
and
I do love that.
The breadcrumbs, right?
And it feels like, well, that's not going to lead to a career. That's not going to lead to my next step. We have no idea. And so often it leads to something I would have never imagined from my logical space.
I hadn't thought about it like that. That's really cool.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, to Danae's point, it's like me coming back to this and being like, go to that space again. Like, what is it that you want? There is no such thing as like, well, here is what I want. I'm going to lay it all out. You know, it's like not robotic left brain that we're talking. This is something for you, I think, to take away and really start to play around with, right? Like, what Danae is talking about is actually feeling into the body. When you get a little bit of a spark, follow that breadcrumb. Right? Doesn't matter where it takes you, just follow the breadcrumb. And if you get a feeling of like, oh, this isn't for me, fine, drop the breadcrumb and turn the other way, right? There's no right or wrong. There's no yes or no on this. It's just following that kind of body intuitive sense. And maybe it won't take you career-wise. Maybe it'll take you to something that's just a passion of yours that lights you up. You know, we don't know. But as scary as it is, this is such an exciting time to be in because you don't have to ask permission of anybody to do this,
right.
You know?
Yeah. I am. That's been for the first time in a long time. And I think I really have to go back to the start because the career that I did have before I was married and had kids, it was, my brother always says that my mom like lived vicariously through me, that I didn't really put a lot of thought into what I wanted to do with my life. And I know my mom, with the best of intentions, would say that she just encouraged me, but I really felt like I was pushed down a certain path when I was young and I didn't have the strength of character to really be like, this isn't what I want to do.
Yeah,
I kind of just kind of went with the flow and ended up somewhere that wasn't my passion at all. But it made my mom very proud.
Yeah. You know, it's exciting though. You get to now show your kids a different way. Like instead of living the unlived life of our parents, which so many of us end up doing, you get to show them what it looks like to change, what it looks like to discover yourself, what it looks like to try and fail and then try something new. To not get discouraged maybe when like, oh, I thought this was it and maybe it's not. Like that's such an exciting lesson to show them because that's what they're going to take away into their own life.
It's so sort of the opposite of what we think, you know, like we think that as parents, like sacrificing everything for our kids and like making them the center of our universe is like how we show them love, and that it's selfish to insist upon me and, you know, what I would love to do for myself. And it's actually the opposite, you know, to the point that V was just making. Carl Jung, one of my favorite quotes of his, is that the greatest burden we will ever put on our children is the unlived lives of their parents, right? And so you're sort of speaking to that, that so often, like, we teach our children what they're allowed to want for themselves. We teach them what it is to live with the fullest sense of aliveness. And so, you know, reclaiming that for yourself and getting, like, literally, like, where you're describing that point of like my last career is a really good place to start. Like, well, what might have been what I was thinking about or contemplating or interested in then? Like, see if you can go back to that girl that I was and really like get in touch with her. Like, what did she love? What did she get turned on by? And start to explore some of those spaces and give yourself like that space to just like really tap into the aliveness that she felt back then, you know?
Yeah, I know that my mom was very much the self-sacrificial, and that is something that I have to try and make sure that I don't carry forward, because like you say, it doesn't do your kids any favors in the future.
And it sounds like even, you didn't change that. I mean, even the idea of like choosing yourself and leaving your marriage, that in itself actually kind of goes against that idea of the self-sacrifice.
And it's a practice for all of us, because like, you're not alone in that. Most of us were raised by parents who conditioned us to believe this is love. I gave up everything for you, you know? And we're restructuring, we're creating a new paradigm where actually loving you well means loving myself and teaching you how to love yourself by me modeling that for you. It's a new world we're creating here, right? Like, we're doing something different, because to the point that you're making, our children don't feel that as love. They feel that as a burden. Like, oh, my parents have sacrificed so much for me. I have to make the choice based on what they've given up. We don't want to put that on them. They didn't ask for that, you know?
Yeah. And when I gave up my career, my mom was devastated. I mean, she took it to the point where it was like her loss.
Personal.
Totally. Yeah. Which was,
I mean, it's such a common thing that, not even common, it's like, it's a new paradigm shift, right? Like that this is what for a very long time was the way that people felt about raising children. You have kids and essentially your life is over, but that's really not what we want to teach our kids. Like, my life isn't over because I've had you. My life is just beginning, and you are like the icing on the cake of the of my life, not all of the ingredients here, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's so, absolutely. It's so unhealthy.
Have you read Untamed yet?
My God, I love that.
I was going to say, I feel like that's one of the ones for you that's going to be like lots of underlining and note-taking.
It's funny. I got it just as my divorce was being finalized. So
perfect timing.
Yep.
Yeah. I kind of read it in the last month that I was in my house, the family house. And I've been meaning for a while to go back and read it again. And like you say, highlight, because there were so many phrases. I was like, this is it. Like, that book is incredible.
She put so many words to things that so many of us have experienced and experience, you know, continually. And I think the purpose of you coming here and having this conversation with us is not about taking a tangible thing away. It's about being like, right, okay, I'm in this next space. It's time to allow myself to really be there and to have fun with the exploration that comes from being there. And maybe going back and pulling from some of that book again would be useful and helpful for you to kind of stir that up. Because I know for me, when I was reading it, it really did like excite me to want to do my own exploration and my own brainstorming and like, ooh, what would that look like for me? And so if you loved it and it resonated with you, you know, maybe that is an idea.
Yeah, there was certain paragraphs that I would take screenshots of and send to my friends, and especially one part about raising daughters. I can't remember what it is now.
It's one of today's favorite lines. Do you remember what it is about?
Of course I do. with that, we as mothers become responsible parents or responsible mothers when we become disobedient daughters, right? And I think
I know Danae knows this one well because it's like,
sobs that like came out of me as I was reading that line. But, you know, Vanessa and I did a book club on that book. And I do think it is a worthwhile book to go back and read. Maybe start a book club with some of your girlfriends so you can sort of process together as like what this is bringing up.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah, it's such a, like, there's so many, God bless Glennon for writing this book, but there's so many universal themes of like we as women have experienced in this patriarchal culture that she like breaks down in ways that we have never thought about them, right? So even as you're leveling up into this space of like, what do I get to give myself permission to do now? It's, I think, helpful to really examine and what have been some of the constraints around why I haven't really given myself permission to explore my bliss in this way, right? Like just sort of like integrating that conversation in the exploration of the imaginal space that V was talking about, you know?
Yeah, I think now going back and reading it like 10 months on, you know, I'm sure I would take a lot of things, just not differently, but just maybe have more like, now I really am starting to get it, or
there's a knowing. Know, there'll be a knowing in it. Yeah. It's her language too, right? There'll be a different knowing in it now than I think in the beginning of that part of your journey.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was one of the books that I thought, man, if I could afford it, I would buy this for every woman in my life. I'm like, everyone has to read this.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Absolutely.
I wish we could force all of our mothers to read it.
Yeah, I wonder how my mom would take that.
we've all contemplated that, Zoe.
I've had so many people be like, would it be passive aggressive for me to deliver this to my mom's address? I'm like, kind of.
And, you know, it's an interesting conversation in that, you know, we've talked about the mother wound a little bit, and the mother wound is something that it doesn't just impact us. It doesn't just impact our mothers. Like this is like patriarchal conditioning that has been passed down through generations, right? So our mothers have been impacted by the stuff that we're talking about. So actually, as much as we're sort of joking that it would be like a passive aggressive dig, it's a little bit their healing as well. So I actually sort of am on board if our mothers would be open to reading it, that they've been impacted just as much as we have by, yeah, absolutely, by the limitation on their own lives.
I know that my mom has a lot of wounds that she's been carrying around, and she's now 78, and she was, my dad was an alcoholic, and he died when I was 13 from alcohol related, you know, his body just, you know, gave up, and she never moved on. She's never even contemplated being with anyone else, seeing anyone else. That was, you know, 25, I was 13, I'm now 38, so that was 25 years ago.
Wow.
And she's been carrying that, and a lot of other loss, family loss in her life. And I just feel like, yeah, there's a lot of weight there that I, you know, I can appreciate a lot more now that I'm older.
You know, what we were speaking to earlier about how we get to model for our children, not that this is like why you're doing it, but I do find sometimes it's helpful to remind ourselves that when we start to choose ourselves, we're also modeling it for the people around us, like our mothers. I don't care if they're 78 or not, what it looks like to choose yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And you're doing it in a way that's not like you're wagging a finger at her and saying, this is what you should be doing. You're doing it for yourself. They just happen to be witness to it. Mm-hmm. And they can't help but be affected by it in some way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you think about intergenerational trauma being sort of passed down, it's not just like the relationship between you and your mother. It's sort of like you choosing you is healing the wounds of your ancestors as well. Mm-hmm. Like this is big work that you're doing, Zoe. And it's actually like the work of really getting still and questioning, what do I want? To me, it becomes like purpose of life work for you, right? Because you're healing ancestral trauma in doing that work and saying, no biggie, but but truly, like the women in your family, you're describing what is sort of like trauma that has been passed down, and it's the buck stops here. It stops with me. I am claiming myself as a way to stop this pattern. Yeah,
that feels good. And I was so worried about telling my mom about the divorce and everything. And then just one day out of the blue, a couple of months ago, she sent me a card in the mail saying, you are so strong. I'm so proud of you. And kind of like, look how far you've come, or something along those lines.
Ooh, there it is. Yeah. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, now a friend of mine is going through a divorce, and you know, I'm really glad that I'm now at a point I can be there for her to lean on me, because her mom is not being supportive, not being on board, and I know it's because she is so unhappy.
Yep.
In her life and her marriage, and she never stepped away, and she is. I tell my friend, you know, you're being a mirror. You're forcing her to look at the unhappiness in her life, and it's not to have the support from her mom, and you know, come up against such a brick wall in terms of, it forces people around you to be uncomfortable.
You're doing so much bigger work than you even realize, and you're already doing it. And I'm like, I just want to commend you so much. And you know, I actually want to go back, you know, as we wrap up, I want to go back to this idea that Danae floated, like, what would it be like if you and a few friends actually got together on Zoom once a week and did a book club around this book? I actually think, and maybe you're like the moderator, like maybe you're the one that kind of kicks it off. It is such a healing, and it's not just that, like, it's Glennon's words that are healing. It's like what Danae was saying, it's processing together as a collective the themes and how they've impacted you all as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's something in that idea for me that feels really, really big for you for some reason.
Once I've walked through a fire, I know how to get through that fire, and I can teach others, right? Yeah. And you're already sort of speaking to it. And I think V and I were sort of feeling the same thing energetically as you were talking about your friends. And it's sort of like, once I have gone through this thing, now I sort of know how to like write the rule book to support other people in doing it. And I think there is powerful in that idea of you being the facilitator, you holding space, because it becomes like, my work is around being of service to other people going through something that I've now been through and know how to come out on the other side.
And there's healing for you in that as well.
Absolutely.
Mm. And that's how I feel in terms of, like, you know, people ask me what I want to do, and I'm like, I don't know yet, but I want to do something that is helping other people.
There might be a breadcrumb in there.
Follow it.
Mm.
Thank you so much. And, Well, do me a favor. Will you email us and kind of let us know what's happening, what's coming up for you? You know, just check in, keep us posted. We'll be curious to see how the next kind of year unfolds for you as we emerge from COVID slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate this so much. Just you guys taking the time, and it's,
Carry on, warrior. Exactly. I love it.
We appreciate you, girl.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cheaper Than Therapy.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And if you want to connect with us, you can find us on Instagram at Vanessa S. Bennett
and at Danae Logan Selkin.